Welcome to the GRF On The Go podcast. The subject matter experts at GRF CPAs and Advisors created this podcast to offer insights on current topics, as well as new ideas and best practices that your team can apply today. This podcast was originally presented as a live webinar. CPE information provided during the podcast is no longer valid, but if you're interested in watching the video version of this session or accessing the slide deck, visit our website at grfcpa.com/events. Enjoy the episode and remember to subscribe for future content.
Hi everyone, it's 11 o'clock and I want to welcome everyone participating in today's webinar, Maximizing Clean Energy Tax Credits for Nonprofit Organizations. My name's Lisa Heller and I'm a nonprofit tax principal here at GRF. Today, we're joined by my colleague, Dick LoCastro, a partner and director of our nonprofits tax division, as well as some very special guests. Phil Williams and Barry Devine from TriMerit have graciously offered their time and expertise for today's presentation. The four of us have a wealth of experience and knowledge in dealing with nonprofit tax policies, so we have a lot of exciting content to share with you today. Dick?
Thank you, Lisa. And before we get into it, just a little bit about GRF CPAs. We're in advisors. We're based out of Bethesda, Maryland, with clients in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area, as well as nationally and internationally. Our firm serves these clients with a wide range of services covering nonprofits, for-profits, schools, government contractors, and others. However, our particular niche is in the nonprofit international NGO space. So we've been in operation for several decades. As a matter of fact, in 2001, during COVID, we celebrated our 40th anniversary. So obviously there's a little damper on the COVID, on the 40th anniversary celebration because of COVID here. So as you see, you'll see on the next slide, we've got a list of summary of the services that we do provide. But we've got a lot of great content today, so without further ado, let's get into it. We're going to kick it off with our first polling question.
Okay, while you're finishing that, I'm going to jump right in. As Dick said, we do have a lot to cover. So Dick, Lisa, Nathan, thank you so much for having us here, and we're looking forward to a successful webinar. We do have a lot of slides. Some of them will be, you know, just for reference and takeaway to get the slides later. We'll do two quick introductions. My name is Barry Devine. I started in this industry back in 2005, started doing with the research and development tax credit. And the last webinar I did, I mentioned I started in 2005 and I saw the chat pop up and someone said I was in third grade in 2005. So anyway, it's been a minute, been a few years working in this industry, and here with working with TriMerit, the founders of TriMerit, me and Randy Crabtree and Andy Lane, we all did research and development tax credit together, worked together back in 2006, 7, and 8. And so happy to be here with TriMerit working on the energy incentives program that we're working on. And I want to quickly introduce one of the partners at TriMerit, Phil Williams.
Thanks, Ray. When you mentioned 2005, yeah. I was trying to piece together where I was. I think I was just
hopefully
finishing
not
up
third grade.
Well, no, I was just finishing up law school and I was trying to find out where the courtroom was. I think at that point is what they call it. So anyway, Phil Williams with TriMerit, serving right now as the director of operations and overseeing programs like what we're going to talk about today. So Barry's going to run you through all of what TriMerit does in a minute, but think of us as specialists. Whenever you have an intersection of engineering and tax, we're able to provide solutions along those lines. I'll hand it back to Barry.
Yeah. So Phil, being a JD and an engineer, that's what the TRI is in TriMerit for specialty tax. We feel that there's three pillars to that. Well, one is tax. So having CPAs on staff and being the absolute support for our CPA channel partners, we have legal and audit representation of what we do. And then since we were kind of founded on research and development, a lot of our project managers are actual engineers. So that's who TriMerit is. And in our story, the CPA is the hero and the CPA is the one that identifies, you know, the incentives, and we just work with the specialty tax. So these are the service offerings that we offer. Of course, research and development tax credit, section 41 of the code. Unfortunately, we also have 174 of the code. Anyone who's been following research and development lately, We'll know that where 174 is and still in effect. We have, from the Inflation Reduction Act, taken on advanced manufacturing. We have created a renewable energy incentives practice. And then in-house, we have energy efficient commercial building deduction, which is the 179 cap D. We have the 45 cap L energy, the credit for developers for residential. And then we have a cost segregation practice in-house as well. Just very quickly to show you what happened after the Inflation Reduction Act was passed in 2022, we had, you know, we had 179D, cost segregation, R&D, and 45L. So what we did is we just created an energy incentives group. So RETC, if you see us refer to that, that's renewable energy tax credits. That's going to be your 48 and your 45 PTC ITCs. And then if you see 48 cap C and 45X here, that's advanced manufacturing. And then the other, you know, just kind of serendipitously, the other services that we offer fit very, very well next to renewable energy because a lot of them are related, whether you need COSEG, 179D, or energy incentives together. And then today, what we're going to do is we're going to go into that credit monetization services. So we're going to focus most of our time on elective pay, which is for the not-for-profits, but we are going to touch on the for-profits as well. Just, you know, knowing how it works with the IRS portal, putting not-for-profits and for-profits together makes sense to explain it until they monetize it. So learning objectives, yes, we're going to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act. We're going to talk about some funding opportunities, a little bit for for-profits, mostly not-for-profits. And then we're going to get into the credits, just the calculation of the credits, 6% credit, 30% credit. What's, you know, prevailing wage? What are the bonus credits? What do those look like? What are some of the catches for not-for-profits? And then we'll go into the monetization, talk about some planning strategies, and we're going to do all of that in 53 minutes. So here we go. So we're celebrating the 2-year anniversary of passing the Inflation Reduction Act. So the Inflation Reduction Act was intended to raise, right? When Congress says, hey, we're gonna pass legislation, well, they have to have the pay-go provisions, right? They have to have some way to pay for it in order to get it passed. So what they said was corporate minimum tax, prescription drug, IRS task enforcement, we're gonna make $739 billion. And we're only going to spend $433 billion. So this, you know, energy security and climate change is mainly where we're focusing on what the spend. This is going to be the tax cost over 10 years. So, you know, the Congressional Budget Office comes out and says, we're going to spend $369 billion over 10 years on these clean energy initiatives. And then Credit Suisse comes out and says, well, we think that number is going to be more like $800 billion. And then, you know, the Brookings Institution said, well, we think it's going to be like $780 billion. And then Goldman Sachs came out and said, it's going to be over $1 trillion in 10 years. So to put that in perspective, the research and development credit, tax credit, you know, cost the government about $10 billion a year. So on a 10-year On a 10-year span, the research and development tax credit costs $100 billion. If the IRA is truly going to cost $1 trillion, that's going to be 10 times larger than the research and development tax credit. And this is the cost spend. So big deal, lots going on. And we're going to try to, you know, show you how that breaks down. How does it trickle down? How does a not-for-profit that you work with actually take advantage of it? So just the energy impacts, you know, we're putting this in here because what this slide says is, yes, a lot of the fossil fuels and old energy is going to be slowly tapering off. But from 2020 to 2050, you know, we're at 4.2 billion kilowatt hours. We're going to be at almost 5.5 in 2050. So the actual need for you know, energy it is just greatly increasing. So this is a, you know, doing everything we can to supplement the need for demand and also use renewable. So this slide has been nicknamed the slide that everybody hates because it's very, very busy. But what this slide here is just that one piece of renewable energy in the Inflation Reduction Act, what we did is we just took the table of contents. This is the table of contents on that one piece, you know, for the three part of the $300 billion. So you can see it touches on, there's a lot of agriculture and forestry programs. If you're working in that space, there's a lot there, right? Community investment, energy justice. I put a few squares around the permitting process, and you can see a lot of, you know, environmental reviews and funds, grants. And then under that clean energy financing, we are going to touch on that today, for-profits and then not-for-profits, how they can, you know, get some of this money. And of course, carbon, they got the residentials, energy innovation. And then mostly what we're going to talk about, or what you're going to see, or what your clients are going to see, mainly are right here. Section 48, that's your ITC, investment tax credit. 45 is the PTC, the production tax credit. So when you kind of break down, hey, this is a big piece of legislation, well, how does that actually work? What's the tax code? What's the tax form? How do I get money, and how do I take advantage of the credits? So that's where we're going to be focusing most of our effort today. We're going to do a little bit of funding for profits, and then we'll jump into not-for-profit. So I will go through this a little bit quickly. There is the Loan Programs Office, who has through the DOE, and they've been sitting on $40 billion. And what they're trying to do is give this money away. I do have a very quick story. The gentleman that runs a LPO office, I was just at a conference, listened to the spiel, and then I was sitting down at lunch, and he sits down next to me, and he said, hey, you know, hey, Barry, you have any ideas of like how we can give this money away? And I just always like to tell that story, because they are literally trying to get the word out. Let taxpayers, you know, stakeholders know this money is available, and this is how you can go get that money. So I told him I couldn't really do anything except try to spread the word on it. And so the Loan Program Office does have, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. There's going to be a lot of resources in here for you to go through and look if you want to go and kind of trace any of that funding. So the bipartisan infrastructure legislation, there's really three pieces of legislation that all tie together: the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS and Science Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act. A lot of those, when it boils down, you're going to see a lot of those programs that just come in from those three pretty monumental pieces of legislation. Just on the left here, this Inflation Reduction Act, they have a guidebook out, which is really great just to have as a resource. If someone's talking about, well, is there something for, you know, this type of program or that type of program? What you can do is just open that up and control F and say, hey, yeah, there's actually a program in here for that. So just going through the funding opportunities, they break it out. There's the LPO for the DOE. There's greenhouse gas, pollution, environmental justice, Department of Agriculture program. So you have the table of contents, breaking it down. Here's the funding, and it's going to go into. So this one office that was created is the Manufacturing and Energy Supply Chains. This was created just in 2021, 2022. And what it does is it kind of bolts on to the DOE in order to, it's the, like the administrative arm of the DOE to administer a lot of these programs. So, you know, they're working on, and like the domestic supply chain, you're going to hear us say that a lot during this presentation. You're going to hear it a lot with, okay, we want domestic manufacturing. We want supply chain. We want prevailing wage and apprenticeship. So they have manufacturing capacity, a lot of workforce development, and then they do a lot of analysis and strategic investment. So one of the programs that we took on under, you know, the advanced manufacturing, because we've been doing R&D since a lot of people were in third grade and since, you know, Phil was trying to find the courtroom. So we have a very strong background in manufacturing and R&D. So we took on the 48 Cap C, which is Advanced Energy Manufacturing Investment Tax Credit. It's administered through the MESC, but it's reviewed by the DOE and then finally decided on by the IRS. So you can see how all of these different programs are working together in order to go from the very busy table of contents slide I showed you all the way down to you or your client. So if you do go to the DOE website, they have funding opportunity exchange where you can see they're going to, you know, here's an announcement for some funding going out. Here's a heat pump defense program, domestic manufacturing conversion grants, something for everyone, right? Big smorgasbord, but, you know, kind of run through that MESC office, but controlled by the DOE, eventually gets to, you know, the IRS. So this will be here for you. If you're interested in looking for funding opportunity announcements, FOAs, those are there. Some of them are pre-application. You know, they're just kind of all over the board. It'll tell you what type it actually is, what the deadlines are, requirements. So from the time, you know, the DOE was trying to give away some of this money just until just recently, they've created this third party company called Energy Works, where it's basically trying to, you know, put the funding with the end user. So they're trying to match, like, what entities can go get some of these dollars. And they break it out very similar to the IRS. We've got high solar, wind, geothermal, bio, nuclear, carbon capture. And so they're just trying to basically be the bridge for, you know, providing this funding. So that's going to be it for funding for profits. We're going to do polling question number two. And I'm going to keep on moving here. And like Dick said, if anyone does have questions, you put them in the Q&A. We'll try to answer them. If they're questions that, you know, maybe require, you know, a little bit of research or follow up, we can actually have the Q&As and respond to everyone and try to get an answer. So looks like polling question two still happening. So funding opportunities for not-for-profit entities. This is, there's also a lot happening in this space. So another, you know, there's this, the SCEP, it's the State and Community Energy Programs, and the DOE, there's a lot happening for funding for not-for-profits. So the State and Energy, State and Community Energy Programs, they actually partner with the DOE as well. And currently there was there's been a lot of webinar series. One of them was yesterday, the first of a three-part series, and they're just kicking off webinars on funding strategies for not-for-profits. So you can go in here and find resources if you're trying to chase the money, trying to follow money, trying to get money for not-for-profits, if you're in that space. But this is just kind of tying all these different organizations together in order to identify what the programs are, understand what the funding is, what it's for, mechanism in order to claim the dollars, and then, you know, helping, you know, through the process of the implementation of going clean energy and reducing the energy bill, right? At the end of the day, it's what it's for. So not only are you going green, but you're also going to be saving money, and the government's going to help fund a lot of that. So the SCEP, you can get on their website and follow what they're doing currently right now. So from the DOE, the Office of State and Community Energy Programs, yesterday they had, I don't know why it says the 28th on it on there, but that was yesterday. So the funding strategies was the first, I don't know why it says August 24th right here, but anyway, it was yesterday. They had the first one. If you're in, you should, you know, get on here. So what they're going to be doing is just kind of like, they call it making the case, which is just talking about like how to connect people or what these programs are. And then in September, they're going to talk about rebates and incentives and more diving into what programs you can actually go get money. And then the last one will be lenders and investment stacking, they call it, which, you know, we'll be talking about actually getting that money in the not-for-profit's hands. So this is something to follow if you want to try to follow the money for not-for-profits and actually be involved. Here is how they broke out. I just took this from the Midwest Climate Collaborative yesterday. This is how they're breaking out how money comes. How can you get it? What are you looking for? So that's grants, right? Competitive grants are the application process, formula funds, rebates, And then the next one, well, that's where we come in. Tax credits, direct pay, direct and elective pay, right? You're going to be able to take the ITC or the PTC, and you're going to get a refund from the government, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. I'm going to turn it over to Phil to talk about how that actually works. And then there's loans. I'm not even sure what challenges or competitions are, but maybe, you know, application process, technical assistance. So that is a breakout of how the financing is flowing. So now, not-for-profits, talking about general business credits, this is where that just the education gap is mainly is, because a not-for-profit, I'm a church, I'm a school, I'm going to put solar on my roof, but what does it mean I get a tax credit? I get a check from the government, and I have no idea what a general business credit actually is because I'm a not-for-profit. So we're going to talk into that and break down kind of that connection and tactically what it looks like. There are, you know, of course, Section 45, those are PTCs. Section 48, ITCs, I'll explain the difference of those two. Or advanced manufacturing, there's other, you know, there's a ton of programs, but they're going to flow from that tax code to the tax form, normally the 3468, which will calculate the credit, 3800 to the not-for-profit 990T. So, Section 45, this is your production tax credit. This is where you're producing. So you're producing it. So you're gonna generate electricity and you're gonna sell it. And at the end of the year, you're gonna get paid for how much you sold. So these are kind of after you produce wind, solar, geo, irrigation, hydropower. If you're creating energy and selling it at the end of the year, you get a production tax credit. On the right side, this is where most will be falling. Section 48 is the investment tax credit, meaning you spend $1 million in 2024, you get a $300,000 credit in 2024. You invest in it, you get a credit. Most of the people, time value of money, however it works, are going to be looking at the ITC because, you know, they want the return on investment as quickly as possible. So what are we seeing? What is our personal experience here? We do have a lot. We have a lot of solar. We have a lot of geothermal. We have combined heat and power projects. We have waste energy recovery property. We don't have any small wind. We do have energy storage and some biomass projects. So, I mean, solar is number one, geothermal number two. And then under that, I mean, you know, we, of course, we have a base in manufacturing. So we do find the waste energy recovery property. And there's a lot of geothermal, like schools in the north. Geothermal is awesome. It really, really is. So that's what we're seeing in the investment tax credit side. We have some examples that we're going to go through in a minute. So this is, you know, we actually had the good fortune of presenting alongside the IRS. So just another quick story. At another conference, I was, you know, walking the hallway and I saw one of the sponsors and it said Internal Revenue Service. So I was like, oh, I have to find out why is the IRS sponsoring an actual tax conference? So I walked over to the IRS and said, hey, what's the IRS doing here? And they said, oh, well, we're just trying to get the word out to taxpayers of how to take advantage of all of the incentives through the Inflation Reduction Act. And I said, well, that's interesting because that's the same exact thing I'm doing here. So we actually invited the IRS to one of our conference that we had, and we presented side by side, you know, the specialty tax and the IRS on, they have stakeholder liaisons that are available to call, to speak with and to say, hey, I'm a not-for-profit. How do I qualify and how do I get this money? How does this work? And they're more than happy to help. Yes, the same IRS you all deal with. Yes, they're more than happy to help. So it's been really, really awesome having that relationship. So this is how they broke down the credits and incentives. These are all, you know, there's some of the possibilities. You can see this one's going to be credits for energy, and they put carbon, energy and carbon together. There's your 45, right? wind, biomass, geothermal, solar, land. 45Y, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. 48, 48E, the Y and E are what's going to happen in 2025 from the Inflation Reduction Act. 23 and 24 had just section 48 and 45. Already at the end of this year, those expire and move to something else. So clean energy investment credits, you know, there's carbon dioxide sequestration, lots of that. So credits for manufacturing, we just want to, you know, thank Congress for putting not only like asset-based incentives, but facility-based. These are facility-based. This is for if your building creates something that goes into renewable energy, that's how you qualify for the 45X Advanced Manufacturing Production Credit or the 48 Cap C Advanced Energy Project Credit. And then this here 48D, I told you there's a bipartisan infrastructure bill, IRA, and then there's the CHIPS and Science Act. So 48D actually is the CHIPS for manufacturing semiconductors or manufacturing parts that go into semiconductors. And then commercial energy, we just want to thank the IRS for putting our two services together as well. Like, hey, 45L-179D, that's what we're experts in. So we didn't tell them to put it that way. They just chose to do it that way. So we're going to talk really quickly about what are the rates, what to look for, bonus credits, and then we're going to get into the monetization piece. So you're going to hear 30% credit, ITC credit, like all day long. And that is, it could be true. It's true if you're under 1 megawatt, which maybe a lot of your clients will be under 1 megawatt. If you're under 1 megawatt, yes, you can have a 30% ITC. Or you either started before January 29th, 2023, you're under 1 megawatt, or you meet prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirements. And I just copy and pasted a quick little snippet from the Treasury and IRS saying, hey, don't forget to do that because we're going to come audit it because we think it's very, very, very important. So if you're over 1 megawatt and you started after January 29th, you get a 6% credit. Unless you meet prevailing wage, you get a 30% credit. Just a quick side note on prevailing wage and apprenticeship. It's a 5X multiplier for 45L, for 179D, and for the rules under the Inflation Reduction Act for 48 and 45. So it just takes the credit times five. And so it goes, it's the kind of the same math for multiple programs. But it's going to be a big deal, and you have to follow these guidelines, and the you know the penalty. you have to pay it back if you don't meet it, and they're saying it's $5,000 per laborer, or if they feel you did it intentionally, which we love when they put a lot of gray area on. You know, I say yes, you say no, but if they feel it's intentional, they're going to double that penalty. So there is a good faith effort exemption for the apprenticeship requirement. So 15% of the labor force must be an apprenticeship program. If there's not one available where you are and you made good faith effort, then you can get an exception for the apprenticeship requirement. But, you know, prevailing wage, you know, follows the Davis-Bacon Act, and it's per county, like county zip code. You can go in and see what it is and what you need to be what the wage guidelines actually are. If you have a bigger project, there are bolt-ons for payroll that are going to do it in real time. And then just the last note on prevailing wage and apprenticeship. If you are a not-for-profit or for-profit and you get elective pay or you sell your credit, there's a five-year recapture period. So any maintenance and repair on your project for the next 5 years must also meet prevailing wage and apprenticeship. So it's a big deal and they're serious about it. So if we want to, you know, here's the applicability chart of, you know, there's 179D, 45L, you know, the 48, yes, you need both. So there's some notes here on where to find what the applicable rate is. So now we're going into, let's say we have a 30% credit. Well, there's going to be additional credits and I'm sure you've heard a lot about this. One is called domestic content. It's a 10% credit. It is a, there's prevailing wage, 5x multiplier. You'll get 2% if you don't meet it. If you do meet it, you get 10%. So that's why there's a multiplier. So domestic content, it's 10% of the qualified basis, not just of the credit. So in a lot of cases, pretty big deal. Energy community, also 10% of the qualified basis. And then low income community, pre-application process, you're going to get 10 or 20%. So one client, let's say we're at 30%. If they meet domestic content, 40, energy, 50, low income community, 60 or 70. So if you meet the low income requirement, you're in a certain area and energy and domestic content, your ITC could potentially be 70% of your qualified basis. You know, just stop and pause and think about that. That is that's just an incredible amount. So domestic content, this is where steel and iron 100%. Domestic manufactured components, there's the project level and then the manufactured component level. So it's been a lot harder to qualify for solar. It's been a lot more challenging than people have thought in order to make this happen. The certification statement and doing it real time is 100% recommended. So this is just, you know, it's just getting the componentry and making sure you're going to hit it. So it started at 40%. So it's going to be 40 every year, 45, 50. In 2027, 55% of the components have to be domestic in order to qualify. The main caveat here is going to be for the not-for-profits. And this just came, the not-for-profits are thrown into this bucket because under 6417, the regs that say you're going to get a refund, we're going to get a refundable credit. If you get a refundable credit, they want you to do domestic content. So if you don't meet domestic content, this is if you're over 1 megawatt and you don't meet domestic content and you're applying for elective pay, you're going to get a 10% deduction if you don't meet it. So they're doing a haircut for directive pay entities for anyone over 1 megawatt. So that is one thing to watch out for, meeting domestic content or not. And of course, there's some gray area behind there. But if you're not for profit, this is definitely something to look out for. Energy community bonus, there's three areas to qualify for this. Brownfield, metropolitan statistical area, and median unemployment. You have to check the unemployment rate, and then coal closure. So it changes between 2023 and 2024. So you got to go on here and certify that you're gonna qualify. And if you're the brownfield where they draw the lines has been up for debate, and the coal closure, people are saying, well, we were next door to coal closure. So it seems very straightforward, but there's a little bit of technicality underneath it. And then the MSAs, don't forget unemployment, and there is a mapping tool. And then the low income is a pre-application process. So you have to submit prior to place in service in order to receive the 10%, or if you're in additional categories, there's a low-income Indian, low-income residential, or low-income economic benefit. If you meet that area, you could get up to 20% credit. And then what they do is they try to only allocate 1.8 gigawatts of capacity. So not really sure how they're measuring that. But you go on this website and you pre-apply and they say, okay, we give you a registration number. They do open windows and then they do a lottery program in order for you to receive it. So one more thing before we jump into changing for not-for-profits on here, you might see a lot of bond financing adjustment. So if it is tax-exempt bond financing, there is a reduction to the credit. So it's reduced by the pro rata portion of any tax-exempt bond financing to the total, or a maximum reduction of 15% of the credit. So it's a credit with the bonuses. So what that actually means is if you have a credit and you read like a 30% credit that's reduced by 15%, you're really going to take a 25.5% credit. So they do cap it and it's still very, very lucrative, even if you had tax exempt bond financing because of that cap. So it's, you know, it's worth it to, you know, to get the bond financing and still take the credit. But when you do the credit, there will be an adjustment if you need to make that adjustment. And then the grants are another story. They are case by case. Most of them do not reduce the credit. You cannot exceed 100%, though. If you have a 75% grant and a 30% credit that puts you over 100, there is a haircut, and there's a lot of rebates, grants, buy downs, buybacks. There's a lot to understand whether it's going to affect your credit or not. So it is definitely case by case, and we're not telling you that they don't have an impact, but you got to do it case by case. Okay, right before we move on, the Inflation Reduction Act, I have always talked about, hey, 48 and 45, yeah, let's go out and get it. Well, those change at the end of this year. 12/31, 2024, 48 and 45, a lot are going to stay. Like geothermal is going to stay. There's some storage in there. There's some other provisions that are just going to stay until 2032. But basically, 48 becomes 48E, which becomes clean electricity investment tax credit, and 45 becomes 45Y, clean electricity production tax credit. So what you need to know here is it's going to be technology neutral. So they don't care whether you're doing solar or, you know, the geo or bio, or they don't really care what you're using, how you're using it. They want to go net zero on facilities. So there's not an exact list of like, this is solar, this is wind, because it's going to be technology neutral. They just want to know that you're going net zero and your emissions, you have zero emissions. So when you look at 48E, which we're still waiting on final guidance, this is going to come, I don't know, sometime between now and the end of the year, or, you know, as the government likes to do, like let the year pass and then we'll do the final regs later. So we're going to wait on the final regs, but this is what it looks like now. You know, solar, wind, storage, hydro, waste energy recovery, you know, microturbines, all of these are going to be included, even though it's technology neutral. Geothermal remains, just like geothermal, like, yeah, 100%. Every school, you know, every university, hospitals, let's do geothermal. They love geothermal, and so do we. They're great projects. Combined heat and power kind of goes away because it's kind of based on fossil fuels, but they're like, well, if you can make it, you know, net zero, then you could take a PTC. And then electrochromic glass was in there for 2 years, just microcontrollers on their own, certain things expire. So if you have a not-for-profit, if you have a client that's thinking about solar, thinking about, well, geothermal is good, but thinking about a facility that they want to install renewable on, it's going to be a great idea to get 5%. There's safe harbor rules, 5% before this year closes. That would be a very, very great idea to get it in under 48 and not 48E. So pull in question number three, then we're going to go to monetization. And I'm going to turn it over to Phil here because I've been hogging the presentation. I know there's a lot of information. You know, a lot of these slides are for takeaway, reference later, cliff notes. If you went through high school like I did, you can use them as cliff notes. So I'll let that happen. And I'm going to keep rolling. We've got about 21 minutes left. Hope everyone's paying attention. This is why, you know, are you still listening? Okay. So the absolute power of the Inflation Reduction Act is the monetization. And this is just, there's always been, just like the research and development tax credit. Oh, it's great for all these big, big, big clients that don't have any tax liability. Right. That's why we got the payroll offset for startups. But it's still limited. Still limited. What the Inflation Reduction Act did is like, who can benefit from it? Well, when we say everyone, we really pretty much mean everyone. Businesses, for profit, you can use it. You can sell it. Not for profits, you get a check from the government. Churches, schools, government, right? Like instrumentalities, you know, we have a current city right now taking it. It is just, it's just incredibly powerful to get refundable tax credit. So when you're thinking of monetization, excuse me, there's two paths. One is under code section 6417, that's your not-for-profits. They are called P's, for elective pay. If you're a for-profit, you're called a T, which is transferability. So elective pay, transferability. If you look at this super confusing and super hard to read chart, it'll say what entity type you are and what credit is available for elective pay, for transfer. Here's all your C-Corps, S-Corps, partnerships, REITs. You know, here's your state, districts, government, you know, tax exempt, Alaska Native. They're all elective pay. Some of these are both. 45X is both. The carbon sequestration, even if you're a for-profit, you get a check from the government. So this little table breaks it down at a really high level. What we're going to do is talk about, you know, how this works. If you have a not-for-profit client and they're thinking about going solar, we need to show them what the client journey looks like. So we have been partnering with, you know, organizations or even the solar installer or the engineering firm that does geothermal in the very beginning. So when they pitch that not-for-profit who has, you know, financing and a board and a group decision and said, I've never taken a credit before, we've always wanted to go green, how does this work? In the very beginning, we talk about their monetization. What does your journey look like? You're going to install solar. Your tax year is going to end here. You're going to place in service. Your tax year ends, give or take on this date in time, you're going to file a 990T and get a check from the government. Like, mind blown, but it's true. It's true. So we try to walk them through their journey in the very, very beginning. Then the administration, that is, you know, signing a contract, signing, yes, I'm going to do geothermal. Yes, I'm going to hire Trimerit. Yes, we're going to spend this money. What else do I do? Well, Trimerit gets you on that IRS portal as fast as possible. We're going to walk through the portal in just a minute. It is absolutely critical. I'm going to show you how it ticks and ties in the tax returns and how to claim it. The due diligence, this is called due diligence. It's called a validation study. It's called a renewable energy tax credit, or it's called a cost seg study. It's all the same. It's where we calculate your number and provide tax forms. And then the monetization, 990T process, or transfer and sell a credit. That's what that looks like. So a lot of times we'll show the not-for-profits what it is. Are you an applicable entity? Okay, boom, you're right here. Let's scope it out. Let's get you on the portal. Let's calculate the credit and then elective pay. We're going to provide you a 3468 that just calculates the form. We're also going to show you what a 3800 is, a general business tax credit form. Even though you're a not-for-profit and you've never seen one of those before, don't worry. It is how it works. It's just how it tracks it. And then it goes to the 990T. And then right here, the little pot of gold for the little leprechaun at the end of the rainbow, receiving that check from the government. It is a beautiful thing. So the couple last slides for me, everybody has to be in the portal, whether you're doing the CHIPS Act, whether you're doing the IRA, you have to register your intent to make elective pay or transfer. That's why we kept a lot of the for-profit stuff in here, because the portal is going to be the exact same portal throughout the process. I just put some terms in here for elective pay, whether you're an applicable entity, eligible taxpayer, registrant. You have to have an ID.me account. You have to sign in, and you're going to go T or P. This is something that, you know, Trimerit can walk. We've had a lot of clients, not-for-profits, get confused on the very, very, very first question. The first question has three choices, and they'll get lost as a not-for-profit. So this is what it looks like. The client is looking, the IRS is looking for 120 days prior to filing. There's a lockout period. They review it. They look at your general information. They look at your tax credit information, latitude, longitude. You know, they want to know what credit you're taking, what you're planning on doing. Then they're going to say, here's a registration number to file your return. A lot of not-for-profits will come in here and not know what to choose. So we walk them through this path. Here's what the facility property looks like. You know, here's the latitude, longitude that the IRS is going to use in order to, you know, to track it. And then again, the IRS has a lot of information here on who's eligible for these tax credits. So I'm going to turn it over to Phil on this slide right here, where the IRS is saying, hey, apply now if you are, you're on a timeline in order to file your tax return. So there is timing. Phil, I'm going to turn it over to you on this slide, and then the 990 is the next slide.
All right, perfect. Go ahead and, and skip forward one slide for me, Barry.
Yep.
Beautiful. First off, Barry, thanks. I mean, this is a ton of information. The subject matter is really, really intense and really, really grueling. I know when Barry and I were talking about splitting up responsibilities for this session, Barry's like, well, hey, why don't we try to split things up evenly? And I was like, hey, why don't you take the passion and the energy that you have around this and just roll with it? So it's awesome. It's really, really complex subject matter. But one thing that I wanted to talk about, and this, I think this kind of shows off how we work with the CPA firms that we partner with. You know, usually we don't have to worry about getting the credits and incentives that we assist our clients with, actually getting those on a form. You know, usually we're working hand in hand with the CPA that's comfortable with that. This was new for us. This was new when we started to talk to those municipalities, when we started to talk to those schools that didn't have unrelated business income. Some of them said, we've never filed a tax return before. Like, how do we do this? Like, what's the actual mechanism for doing this? So the way that the IRS has set this up, they had to have a mechanism. They chose to put it on the 990T as a way to actually claim the credit and a way to, you know, take the amount that was spent, claim it, and get that check back. So with that 990T has come its own set of, you know, new learnings and in some cases complications. One of which has to do with any of the organizations that fall under Section 6417 D1A. You know, that may be city governments and maybe other municipalities. So I'll walk you through that in one second. But basically, in order to claim it, there does have to be a 990T filed in conjunction with the 3468, where the credit is claimed, and the 3800, which is the general business credit form. So, Barry, if you can skip ahead one slide. So this shows, you know, where that's actually claimed and what type of organizations can utilize this method, can utilize this approach. You can see that there is the one small red check mark over the 6417 D1A applicable entities. This is, again, the portion where it's become a little bit more complicated. Let's skip ahead one more, Barry. Line G is where that elective payment amount comes in from the 3800. So again, not a ton of reporting, which is done on this form. It's just the mechanism. It's just the way that this gets reported. But if you skip ahead one more, with the 6417 entities, the industry hasn't caught up yet. So it's required that the 990T be filed electronically. Most, from what we've seen, most of the tax software providers out there haven't caught up. They don't have the e-filing option for the 6417 D1A. If you attempt to file it, it won't let you. If you mail the 6417 in, we found that it's going to get rejected. So the process that you need to follow, this was written with a little bit of Jess in mind, but the conveniently short email of irs.elective.payment.org.transfer.of.credit@irs.gov, you can contact them and you can explain what's happening. And really what they'll do is they will reach out with a different address to send it into. That's the level of sophistication that we're dealing with, but a different address to send it into, as well as an explanation of how to paper file that. So we're working through our first example of that now, but that's what we've seen from the IRS. Again, something that wasn't envisioned, wasn't properly planned for, but there is a mechanism for fixing it. So real quickly, and I know we're actually getting a little bit tight on time, I want to real quickly go through four different case study examples. So, you know, what does this translate to? So these are actual examples that we've seen, you know, clearly using round numbers. But in this example, we've worked with a lot of school districts. And in this case, they were putting in a geothermal heat system placed in service in October of 2023. They spent about $4 million on it. What that's going to translate to them, because that is under the BTU equivalent of that 1 megawatt, they're going to qualify for the 30% base credit. So $1.2 million on that four. They're also, because of the materials and because of the what it was built with, they're also going to qualify for the domestic content bonus. So on that $4 million worth of spend, they're going to receive a check back from the government of approximately $1.6 million. So look simple there. There's a ton of work that went into it, but it's a really, really good example of saving that 40%. Let's give another example. Mm-hmm. So a little bit smaller. This is a church in Texas. They put up the solar panel system, a little bit more than $500,000. They were located in one of those energy communities that Barry talked about. So what they qualified for, again, less than the 1 megawatt that they're putting out. So 30% or $165,000 on their $550,000 worth of spend, but they qualified for the energy community bonus, which was another $55,000. So they ended up reaping about a 40%, same as before, just a little bit different way to get there, but getting that 40% benefit on what they spent. This is one of the one of those examples of municipalities, again, smaller solar panel project. This is an example of the tax-exempt bond financing. So they spent $347,000. They would qualify for $104,000 worth of base credit, but they had to make that adjustment based on the tax-exempt bond financing. They had to take $15,600 off of the base credit, resulting in the $88,500 aggregate credit. And then one last example. This is a bigger one. This is for a not-for-profit hospital system in Minneapolis, putting on $150 million remodel. And as part of that, they're going to have a $30 million combined heat and power cogeneration system. So one of the examples that Barry went through, which is actually going away if you haven't placed it in service during 2024. So they're not going to qualify for any bonus credits. However, they are going to generate that 30% ITC. So on the $30 million worth of spend, they're going to end up getting the $9 million rebate back from that. So four good examples, four different types of taxpayers, four different types of not-for-profit entities, and you know, all being able to reap the benefits of what this program from the government can cover. So I'll toss it back to Barry to cover a couple of last cleanup items, and I believe back to Dick to finish up.
So really quickly, I just want to throw out chaining. This is, if you read 6417, they have this thing called chaining, which is where a not-for-profit actually buys a credit and then gets a refund from the government. So this is still open for comments for this year. They're up until December of this year. So if you think this is a good thing for not-for-profits, which we actually do, it would it'd be an amazing thing. So it's basically you use transferability, not for profit. I have some cash. I buy a credit for 80 cents on the dollar, but then I get a refund from the government. So it's basically a 20% ROI for a not for profit for doing nothing other than having some cash in the bank. So go put comments in between now and the end of the year if you want chaining to be allowed. I threw it in there just because it's a really cool little part of 6417. So I know this is a not-for-profit slide. So in the next like 2 minutes, I'm just going to quickly go over the transfer. This is if you're a for-profit and you sell it. I know we had a mix of attendees today. So the for-profits, they have the exact same process, except over here, you do a transfer election statement and you find a buyer. So there's 11 credits eligible for transfer, the same as elective pay. The final regs for 6418 came out. It talks about recapture, credit adders. You can't do more than one sell. You have to pay in cash. There isn't a, you can do advanced commitments. And the registration and election process, which is the exact same as the other one. This is where if you have for profit, the IRS has a process, you know, complete it, verify, find a buyer. So a lot of this is just takeaway for people on this call if you're not for profits, and then just what it looks like. Here's the main point of the slide is here's eligible property, eligible taxpayer, and eligible credit. Those go to to a buyer, the transferee, who becomes the taxpayer. So if you have a client that's a for-profit for-profit that's buying a credit, they become the taxpayer, which is relevant because if it gets audited in a five-year recapture period, the IRS is going to audit the taxpayer, which is the buyer. So the onus is on the buyer to make sure it is correct. One last thing here is looking, if you do have, like, let's say there's a $10 million credit, that one credit and one registration number can be divided by multiple buyers. So if you're working with entities that want to buy credits, you could pull them for one credit. You know, you can insure the credits, one recapture, one credit, and all of them will be under that same credit and insurance policy. Pricing considerations in the marketplace, you know, like PTCs with no recapture going for 95 cents on the dollar. Most ITCs are going for about 85, 86 cents on the dollar, but there's a lot of considerations on how to price credits. Here's an example of a CHP that we worked on, Combined Heat and Power. It's in Massachusetts, $3.9 million credit, and it's being sold currently for a 2023 credit. So if you're looking in the marketplace and you see a lot of like credit exchange, credit transfer, a lot of these individuals doing it, buying and selling credits, this is what it'll look like. We are in that space, but only in our own little world to work with, you know, the clients we know and the CPAs that we work with, because our reputation's on the line. Here's the last slide for us. It is, you know, what's planning? Like how to like look for current idea, like who's expanding, who's doing construction, understanding what your clients are going to get into. Are they going to spend money? When are they going to spend money? What's the size of their project? What other incentives are out there? Are they expanding? Do they need cost segregation? Are they a not-for-profit and they don't care about depreciation? Did they actually expand and now qualify for 179D? If they did and they're a not-for-profit, they can allocate that deduction to the designer of record, right? There's going to be advanced manufacturing. And in this space, another reason we love this space, good old-fashioned R&D. There's just R&D all over, and we just love R&D and the advanced manufacturing and the renewable energy tax credits. So this is our last slide here before I turn it back over to Dick. Like prior to this, we would work with a CPA firm. They would identify a client, call us, we'd do our work. It'd be the client, the CPA, and us. You know, we stay in our lane. We do a great job. Just like, you know, three parties involved. Now, when it gets to this new world of like, there's a developer, there's an installer, there's financing, private equity, you know, there's insurance. There's a lot of players involved now. So knowing your partner, knowing your channel partners, choosing who you work with, everybody has to be reputable in this big new ecosystem that we're working in, following the federal and state regs, you know, whatever players are involved now. It's just critical to, you know, for us and the CPAs and, you know, everyone to make sure they're choosing the right partners. So that's why we want to thank Dick, Lisa, and Nathan for having us today, and I'll turn it back over to Dick to round us out.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Phil. We really appreciate it. I know you covered a lot of ground in a very short period of time, and I think that the takeaway, as you just said, Barry, is that, you know, for people to be aware of what things may qualify and then reach out. And as you know, we've had some of our some folks reach out to us and say, hey, we're thinking about this project. Right. I know there is there was a couple of questions that came into the Q&A, and I think that Barry and Phil can reach out and answer those maybe offline afterwards. But again, thank you all for a great presentation. Want to thank everyone for attending today's discussion. I know it's a lot of technical stuff, but really important stuff. And you saw the numbers and how it can really help our organizations. So we encourage you to follow us on social media at GRF CPAs. Visit our website for upcoming events and alerts as things like this develop. Again, thanks everyone, and have a great day, and happy a safe, happy, healthy Labor Day.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the GRF On The Go podcast. Visit our website at grfcpa.com for more information about the services we provide, the industries we serve, or to request a quote.